Well, hello, and welcome to Radio Free Space. Thanks for tuning in today. My name is Ed Holohan, and my guest today is Julie McDermid. She is the Executive Director of Karuna Housing. Thanks so much for sitting in with me today, Julie.
Thanks for having me.
It's good to see you. When's the last and only other time we met? Was at the big event last year, wasn't it?
Yes.
Yeah. Yes, it was. That was splendid, by the way. I know we're going to be telling people about this year's event, but that was really good.
Great.
It was enlightening. It was fun. The food was fabulous. It was great. Well, I think we better start with the big picture, huh? Let's start with the nuts and bolts. Please tell folks about A Taste of Home that's coming up.
Yeah, this is our second annual event. And it was Sister Karen Noiser's idea that essentially we have a bunch of local restaurants who provide meals for people to come, and you can select the meal that you want. We serve salad and appetizers and mocktails at the event.
We sure do.
Oh, yeah. And we sit down and eat, and we get a chance to tell you a little bit about Karuna and what we're up to, and it's just a fun social evening. And this year's event is going to be on Monday, the 23rd. Starting at 5:30 at English Lutheran Church in La Crosse.
Where is that?
It is at 1509 King Street.
Okay.
In La Crosse. And we have four fabulous restaurants, three which are returning. So Mary Cody's restaurant, Pato Azul, and Le Chateau are all returning from last year. And then we have a new restaurant this year, which is Mia's Kitchen. We're super excited.
Yeah, thank you, Mia's Kitchen.
Yeah. That's nice. And then this year, too, we're adding appetizers. Those are from the Time Out Tavern. There will be mocktails from Beer by Bike Brigade. And then, if you remember from last year, we had dessert from Hunt and Gather grazing boards, and it's just sort of a smorgasbord of desserts, cookies and brownies, and they're served in this cute little cone, and everybody just loved them. So
it's not fair, Julie. I'm hungry, and it's still
I know, I just made
it's
myself
not even
hungry.
Lunchtime yet. What are we gonna... Okay, we'll think of something. Once again, please, the date and time for that?
That's Monday, June 23rd, and it starts at 5:30 with a mocktail hour, and then dinner is served at 6:30.
Okay, great. Great. Oh, I guess it would be only honest to say that it's a fundraiser, correct?
Yes,
okay,
yes. It's a fundraising event.
Would you? I guess this is the big question. Would you please give people, our listeners, an overview of homelessness, I guess, in our area, specifically in La Crosse?
Sure. Here in La Crosse, our numbers usually hover between 250 and 300 individuals who are homeless, and somewhere in the neighborhood of about 40 families. And you can find data about that on the La Crosse County website.
Oh, you can?
The,
okay.
Yep. The Pathways Home Program is doing an amazing job with outreach and capturing data. I would say our numbers haven't changed. They've gone down a little bit since COVID, but essentially they're kind of hanging at, you know, like I said, somewhere between 250 and 300.
Yeah.
So we're a little stuck, but we're hoping to make some progress with the Pathways Home group.
All right, tell me about Pathways Home.
Pathways Home is a collaboration between the City of La Crosse and La Crosse County and the nonprofit organizations and other stakeholders within the community. We all came together starting a couple years back to provide input about, you know, creating a strategic plan for our community to try and get to functional zero on homelessness. And so they wrote this plan. It's a 5-year plan. And they started last year, and so far they're doing really good on it. So I think it's a good plan.
So it sounds like a significant coalition. It's a lot of people.
Yeah, it's a lot of people, and our city and county have really stepped up. The county has hired a project coordinator for Pathways Home. They've also hired some additional social work staff to provide some more infrastructure. The city has hired a homeless coordinator, Brian Sampson. So we have our city and county really contributing significantly now, adding some infrastructure and backbone to all of our work together.
I tell you what, that's it's really good to hear considering the state of part of the world these days.
Yeah.
A locality that's actually trying to do something. I hear too many stories about places of just move on, get out of here, move on.
Yep.
And it's pretty grim for a lot of folks.
Yep.
Well, that's good to hear. How does Karuna fit into that picture?
Well, one of the things that the Pathways Home Project has identified is that, you know, we have a lot of great services in La Crosse. I mean, you probably know all the organizations, Cooley Cap, Catholic Charities, Salvation Army, Independent yeah. Living Resources, YWCA. They're, you know, New Horizons. They're all doing great work. But what we need to do now is increase capacity in those programs and then fill in some of the niches, some of the places where we have gaps in our service system. So one of the places was that we don't have a 24-hour monitored supportive housing program. We don't have a lot of sober living, especially for women in the community. So that's what the Pathways Home Plan tries to do. In addition to that, they're trying to bolster our prevention efforts and our outreach efforts, but a big push is going to be increasing capacity in existing programs and then filling those niches. And Karuna does a little bit of both. So we're adding supportive housing capacity to the community, and we're filling niche by providing 24-hour support on site in our supportive housing program. So it's our program also focuses on providing peer support, which we think is really important. Peer support is
tell me what that means.
It's people with lived experience with the same issues that our clients have dealt with. So people with lived experience of mental health issues, addiction issues, even housing insecurity and homelessness themselves. And so our staff are there to support people and walk alongside them mm-hmm. with their journey. We do have case management staff that help people, you know, coordinate with other resources in the community for care. But that 24-hour sort of peer-based, person-centered support is what makes this project run.
That's really good to hear. I'm familiar with folks with big hearts and big brains who live far away from homelessness, who do what they can to help. It is so great to hear that folks who have some experience in the world are part of that effort here. That's that's got to make a huge difference to yep. have a person talk to a person who is truly empathetic because they've been there.
Yep. I think one of the things that our data has shown about our homeless population in La Crosse is that, you know, over the years, we've done a better job as a community trying to catch people before they fall into homelessness.
Oh, okay.
I think COVID was an exception to that. That was pretty hard on our community.
That changed everything.
It did
everywhere.
Change everything. And a lot of the people that you find homeless today are the people that were hit hardest by
yeah.
that. So a lot of our folks were people that worked in retail businesses and restaurants and businesses that were hit really hard and
yeah.
let people go. And then, you know, people didn't have the income to stay housed. But while we're getting a grip on that new group of people becoming homeless, what we're seeing is an increase in the number of people who come into our system, get housed, and then return to homelessness.
Mm-hmm.
And some of that is because it may be, I'm not going to say easy, but
it
might be one thing to be able to get somebody, you know, from, you know, out of shelter into an affordable situation. But a lot of times our folks need a lot more support. in order to stay housed. It's not just a matter of affording it. It's a matter of helping them with all the other, you know, baggage that comes with trying to maintain stable housing. And so that's why programs like ours, programs like Cooley Caps and Catholic Charities, who do supportive housing, are so important, is that we're seeing that population rise. Those people that have bigger needs, who go out to housing, come back into our system. In order to keep them housed, they need more support.
Let me backtrack for a second, because there's a big question in my head. You covered what a part COVID played in it, but in general, even completely aside from COVID, who becomes homeless and why and how? And a lot of people don't have any association, and they're like, oh yeah, homeless, that must be, yeah.
Yeah.
So who does it happen to?
You know, I think that's a really interesting question, and I think if you ask different people, you would probably get different responses.
Yeah.
And I would, nationally, we know that the biggest problem, you know, that brings people to be homeless is affordable housing. And in many, many cases, all it is helping people to find something that's more affordable for them. But that's at a national level, and certainly we see that here in La Crosse. But I'm from Chicago, and so that's definitely true in Chicago.
Sure.
You can be one paycheck away, literally,
absolutely,
from homelessness. But in La Crosse, I see something a little different happening. And, you know, here in La Crosse, a lot of people, you know, you have family here, you have generations of families here, even within sort of a, you know, a four-county region like Vernon County, Crawford County, Monroe County. You know, people may move around a little bit. They may move from Monroe to La Crosse to look for work or, you know, something like that. But they have roots here. And there's a tradition of families and, you know, people that grew up together taking care of one another.
Sure, it's strong. Yeah.
Yeah. And I see a lot of generational poverty here. So I see a lot of, you know, numerous households where multiple generations are living in a single, you know, house. Grandma might have the kids and her grandkids living with her. There might be some housing instability in each generation. But, you know, oftentimes when you're housing insecure, you're not able to make your rent payment, there's usually a family member or friend who will take you in. And so the people that are actually becoming homeless and ending up out on the streets and in our shelters are usually experiencing problems that are much bigger than just, I don't have a paycheck.
I don't have money. Yeah.
Yeah. So a lot of times it's addiction or mental health issues that family members don't know how to handle, can't handle,
right,
and that's why they're ending up back out on the street. So I think our problem is just, I'm not going to say it's totally different than the national problem.
No, I get it.
But I think that also explains why we have so many people who need supportive housing, need a lot more support to stay in housing than just assistance paying the rent. You know, and I think we can get a handle on it. The numbers that we have here are not unmanageable. We just need additional capacity in the programs that we have to be able to deal with it.
So I guess the short of it is the kind of care that those folks need who might be substance addicted or mental health issues, Karuna is trying to offer that to people, service in those departments?
Yep. Our target population in particular is chronically homeless individuals. So individuals who have been homeless for a long time or have been homeless numerous times with a cumulative
total.
In and out. As well as, and so people with, you know, addiction and mental health issues. But we also specifically target people who have been in other programs and ended up back out on the street. Because what that tells us is they need a little bit more support than what they got, say, in a... So a lot of our programs operate by renting a unit in the community and then subletting to a client, and your case manager visits you, whether it's once a week or once a month. And so a lot of our folks here at Karuna House have been through those programs, and it just wasn't enough. they really need that 24-hour support. Yeah. So our program really isn't for, you know, anybody and everybody. It's
gotcha.
It's kind of heavy-handed and a little bit expensive, you know, for people need a hand up.
Things are.
But we, for these other folks, and we estimate there's about 40 to 50 of them in our community, this is the right amount of support.
Gotcha.
And these folks, even though it sounds like a small population, these are the folks that will also go through a lot of resources, cost the community a lot of money in emergency services, whether it's ambulances, police, jail systems, probation officers, you know, mental health services, addiction services, that kind of stuff. They're the ones that are costliest to our community. And so by giving them housing, we're saving the community money, but we're also providing a better outcome for the individual.
See, that's something, I'm so glad you said that. That's something that those of us not in the system or using the system are almost totally unaware of. The costs involved to somebody who has big trouble and needs help with it and is not going to get by without that help. So who gives them the help? Is it prison? Is it, you know, that's a big one. Thank you for that.
I think the National Alliance to End Homelessness, they did a study a couple years back, and they showed that chronically homeless individuals usually cost communities around $36,000 to $38,000 a year each person. And that's just providing emergency services, so shelter, and food, jail, ambulance, you know, all those things. And so it can be, you know, when you put them in a permanent supportive housing program, a lot of permanent supportive housing programs are, you know, you're looking at $16,000 to $20,000 per person paying their rent for services. And so it's much more effective for the community and for the individual to put them in housing.
That's another thing that folks like me don't think of often enough. You know, the first lament is, oh, it's so expensive, and that's my tax, you know, blah, 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 blah. The answer is, oh, yeah, you know what you're paying? If these folks don't get help, you have any idea? That's good stuff. Can you talk, have you folks been around long enough to talk about results? Do you know if you like what you're saying?
So we've been around for about a year and a half. And so we have 11 residents who have all, you know, remained stably housed. Actually, we had a few leave, but one of them is a graduate. So we had our first graduate. Our program
Congratulations. We're
excited for him. And we're going to celebrate him a little at our Taste of Home dinner.
Oh, really? You have a special appearance guest?
Yes, he'll be there with his son.
Oh, that's great.
And we're super excited for him. So our program is meant to be here. It's called permanent supportive housing. It's not meant to necessarily be permanent, but it can be if that's what the individual needs. But it can also be just a stepping stone for a person who needed a little more intensive support in order to get off on their own. So we're excited to have him there. We've had a couple people go to treatment for substance use issues. We have a couple people
because they were here in the first place, or you were the vehicle to get them into.
And then we've had a couple people get employment. We've had a couple people increase their employment, be able to go from part-time to full-time work. We have one person who's looking at going back to school. So those are all, I mean, those are all really typical outcomes that you look for in a supportive housing program, and that most of us report to HUD and our donors on. But I think this year I'm really trying to focus, and I'm going to try and share this at Taste of Home, because I think this is really important, is that when, like, our clients who have been chronically homeless, we have some folks who have been on the streets for, you know, a decade or more, and many who have been housing insecure their whole lives. We have somebody who was homeless at the age of 15 on his own, abandoned by a parent. So that's a lifetime of trauma to get through. And so big changes in, you know, a year and a half, those are sometimes hard to see, but I know that this will sound strange, but a lot of our folks, when they first come in, they find it hard to shed, you know, habits from the street. And so a lot of our folks
I mean, that's survival stuff.
Yep.
How I get by.
Yep. And so, you know, many of them, even though they all have beds and rooms of their own, you know, we were finding them sleeping on the floor. They all have some sort of weapon. I mean, we don't allow, you know, guns or anything, but they'll have
something,
you know, like a pocket knife. They'll have, you know, a pipe or something with them because they're always ready to get up and run. They sleep with their shoes and their clothes on. And so we're finally starting to see that some of our folks are, you know, changing that. You know, we see them, they're all sleeping in their beds now. You know, most of them, you know, have their bed clothes.
Isn't
and they're
marvelous.
Not sleeping with their shoes anymore. And I tell this funny story, but one day one of our residents asked me if I would get some paprika for his chicken rub, and then later came in and asked me if I would buy some white vinegar for the coffee to clean the coffee maker. And I was like, a year and a half.
This is not street behavior.
No, we went from, you know, everybody sleeping on the floor, you know, in their, you know, with their shoes on, ready to run, to, you know, my life is different now. And you know, now I can make a recipe, and I'm learning to use the roaster, and I'm taking care of, you know, the coffee maker.
I just love those stories.
Yeah.
You know, maintenance or creativity that, you know, is dull normal in another life is not dull normal when you're on the street. It can't be.
Yeah.
Why would I ever think about doing that stuff, you know?
Yeah.
I'm too busy staying alive.
And I don't share that story to, like, you know, make it seem childish or, or, I'm not sure what the word is for it, or definitely not to denigrate our residents or, not at all, but that's what it does to you, to not have a stable place to live for that long in your life, is that it's a really big change. To, you know, going from living on the street and simply surviving to, you know, being in a home, learning to trust the staff members here, learning to trust your other housemates, learning to trust that your housing is not going to get pulled out from underneath you. And so to me, that's really the biggest change. And the thing that I want to see for our residents is that increase in quality of life, increase in, you know, feeling like you have some agency and, you know, in your life.
Yeah.
And I'm beginning to see that with all of our residents. So
that's
all
such
of it
a
is good.
Big word, isn't it? That T word, that trust word.
Mm-hmm.
I grew up in New York and I spent 30 years in Chicago. So whether it's the poor soul in the box on Lower Wacker Drive or, you know, what do you trust? There is nothing except yourself to trust.
Yeah.
And that's how you survive. And to hear that folks are like, oh, it's weird. We are here. That's really cool. Thank you for that. I love these stories. Have you written your book yet? Because you really should.
No.
I mean, these podcasts are nice, but
we did have a wonderful author, Bobby Raythert, who had worked on the project Paddling Home with Hope Restores, and she came and did a project with us called Where's Home, in which she went out and interviewed a whole bunch of people in La Crosse who are homeless, formerly homeless, and staff members from across the city who work with individuals in this community who are experiencing homelessness. In fact, some of our residents here helped her, introduced her to people down at Tent City, and she wrote this wonderful book, Where's Home, which is all interviews with people experiencing this in our community.
Once again, the title is?
It's called Where's Home.
Cool.
And it's by Bobby Raythert. And she's just amazing.
Hey, if you're in the mood, because I'd love to hear it, you don't have to be in the mood. How did you get into what you do? Why do you do this, Julie?
I feel like I stumbled in it.
That's a great start. Every novel should open with, I feel like I stumbled into it. How do you mean?
I think I always wanted to do service work. It was something my dad was really passionate about, and I was close to him. And I went to college, and I really thought I wanted to go into the Peace Corps.
Okay.
And I went to a Catholic school, Franciscan school.
I went to a Jesuit school.
And one of the nuns said to me, what about something like Habitat for Humanity,
sure.
which I'd never really considered, and then I got to know Habitat. And I really liked it because of the focus on housing. And so after college, when I graduated, I applied, and I ended up becoming an international partner with Habitat for Humanity. And I went to Uganda for 3 years. Mm-hmm. And here I was, 23 years old, headed off to this country. And the biggest thing I learned in Uganda, besides the fact that it's an amazing country, and it's wonderful to travel, was that a 23-year-old has no business telling people in a village in Uganda how to build houses.
Yeah.
I learned so much more there
about
myself and community than I could ever possibly in a million years share with them. But I came back, and I wasn't really sure how I would end up applying that here.
Yeah.
I struggled with my own mental health for about a dozen years, where I didn't work.
Okay.
And then when I decided to go back to work, when I was ready to do that, I worked for Independent Living Resources as a peer specialist. So I'm somebody with lived experience of mental health. And I worked with people just because I liked it, was finding stable housing. So a lot of my clients were homeless. Some were just housing insecure or needed to move to a place that was more accessible or more affordable. And I just found I really loved it. Mm-hmm. And so that's how I ended up here. I worked for the Collaborative to End Homelessness for a while. I loved that whole idea of community organizing. And I just saw this particular niche in our community. I knew we had a need for this, and I have a passion for working with this population. Sometimes I want to run screaming from the building, tearing out my hair,
but
for the most part, I really love this population. And so here I am.
Wow, that's a great story.
Yeah.
Hey, on behalf of everybody, thanks for doing that. lucky the rest of us. That's a great thing to happen into, you know?
Yeah.
That's marvelous.
Yeah.
Hey, before I let you go, we got to remind people again about what's coming up for you folks. Where, when, how?
Yeah.
And to bring your checkbook.
Yes, it is the Taste of Home. It's our second annual fundraising dinner. It will be on Monday, June 23rd. It will start at 5:30 with a mocktail hour with dinner at 6:30. It's going to be held at English Lutheran Church, and you will get to select a meal from Mary Cody's, Pato Azul, Le Chateau, or Mia's Kitchen. And you'll also have appetizers from the Timeout Tavern, mocktails from Beer by Bike Brigade, and dessert from Hunt and Gather. We appreciate all those folks because, like I said, many of them are coming back from last year. And
which was spectacular. Take it from me.
Yeah.
Hopefully, just thousands upon thousands of people hearing this will say, I want to get in touch with that place. Do you have contact information you can share?
Absolutely. So you can go to our website, which is karunahousing.org. There's actually a form on there.
You know what? Just because, spell Karuna for us.
Karuna is K-A-R-U-N-A.
Okay.
And then housing.org. Karuna is the Buddhist term for compassion. So you can go to our website, and we do have a email contact on there, which is just info@karunahousing.org. I monitor that, so why you don't have my, just put my email address, which is juliem@karunahousing.org, but you can...
One more time, Julie.
juliem@karunahousing.org.
Okay.
So anybody can email and request information. There's also a place on our website to sign up for a newsletter, and that's also where you can find more information about our Taste of Home event. And there's some great stuff on there about some of the wonderful things that our residents have been up to. We had a visit from the Lieutenant Governor last year.
Oh, no kidding.
And we had a little barbecue for her. We do community service, and so we've worked at Habitat Neighbors Day.
Mm-hmm.
So there's some really cool stuff on our website.
Very cool.
Yeah.
Well, on that note, we're going to wrap it up here. You've been listening to Radio Free Space on your community radio station, WDRT. My guest has been Julie McDermott, who is the director of Karuna Housing here in La Crosse. Thank you so much.
Thanks. Thanks for having me.
You take care.
You too.